This is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 41, recorded Thursday, June 29th, 2006. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: full to the brim, and what's the one thing. This week, coming to you from the Travel Commons studio in suburban Chicago, Illinois, a sort of rare nexus of events has conspired to keep me at home for 2 weeks now. I haven't been out of town since June 13th, when I recorded the Travel Commons first year anniversary episode in Boston. My parents' visit spanned a couple of weeks, and I wanted to be in town for that. As it was, I ended up having to fly back from Boston the same day that they were arriving from Denver. And then this week, needing to clean up before heading off to Sweden on vacation, and also wanted to avoid the pre-4th of July masses in the airport. Through all that, I just ended up staying home. And so by the time we depart O'Hare for Sweden on the 4th, I will have been in town for 3 straight weeks. First time that's happened in a long time. So the travel triangulations I've been doing this week have been between my house, my client in a cornfield on the way to Madison, Wisconsin, and my office in downtown Chicago. And while I'm tempted to say that I don't know which one is worse, the expressway traffic in Chicago or the TSA line in Las Vegas, I'm always glad for a stint at home, Monday especially. It was one of those things this past Monday. A heavy rain Sunday night blocked the sewer grate in front of our house, turning our driveway into a water sluice. I walked down to the basement Monday morning to work out, and oh man, water was everywhere. But for once, I was home to help clean it up. It seems every other time that something's gone sideways with the house, I've been out of town and having to leave my wife deal with it. This time, though, I was the one who found it out, so me and the kids being home, we managed to get everything mucked out by dinner time. I was a bit sore from slinging boxes all day, but my wife was feeling better about it, which, as we all know, is the most important thing. Following up, I hope everybody enjoyed Travel Commons number 40, the first year anniversary podcast. I dug deep into the archives and worked very hard not to duplicate too much of Travel Commons number 27, which was the best of the year 2005. Obviously a little bit of overlap there, but I managed to do it with just only a couple of duplications. And yeah, I'll tell you, they were ones that really were part of the first year's greatest hits and just couldn't be left off. Sky Ho wrote, enjoyed episode 40, saying, "You really did a great job of pulling out the stories and the quotes that were the classics. Thanks for the memories. I have a tendency to save your podcasts for those special times when I need a pick-me-up. Today, as I arrived at the Buffalo Airport for a Monday morning flight, I saw the longest security line I've ever faced. Many travelers around me stated they'd never seen one so long. At that point, I knew it was time for a Travel Commons podcast. Silver lining, even with an eternal line that routed to the wall, past all the ticket agents, the line still lasted only as long as episode 40. Well, Sky, good thing I let the anniversary episode run a little bit long. It was 28 minutes instead of the usual 20. I'm glad I could make that TSA wait a little bit more bearable. Steve Frick, in a comment on the website, had a good observation. He said, you know, somehow listening to someone else's time on the road is not as depressing as reviewing your own. Well, Steve, that could be the reason that people listen to this podcast. But then adding on to one of the riffs from podcast number 40, Steve says, P.S., my seatmate on the flight home last night was truly fascinated by the Harry Potter section of the Sky Mall magazine. Weird. And by the way, does anyone ever buy anything from Sky Mall? Well, you know, that's a good question. And it turns out, actually, that SkyMall was sold to a private equity company, as it seems like 50% of the companies in the U.S. are nowadays, to a PE company last December. And the resulting press coverage gives us, you know, a little bit of an answer. SkyMall claims to be seen by 88% of all U.S. domestic air passengers. Think about that one. So while their response rate is low, they say they average one order for every 17 flights, which works out, if you do the math, to about one order for every 1,500 people who thumb through it. The law of large numbers, that 88% converts to, that 88% of domestic air passengers converts to more than 650 million people annually. The law of large numbers results in annual sales of over $100 million. Amazing. I mean, that's a lot of Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings jewelry. But even more amazing, SkyMall says that 60% of its orders are placed more than 1 week after the customer sees the seat pocket catalog. So not only are people buying a lot of Harry Potter chess sets, they're giving it a lot of thought. Truly amazing. Hey, the site redesign, complete with a move to a WordPress blog, has really led to a nice increase in the number of comments posted on Travel Commons. Jeff Slater commenting on the story in Travel Commons number 38 about the good service I received from American Airlines when booking my frequent flyer tickets for next week's trip to Sweden, tells his own story. He said, "Your story about getting frequent flyer tickets to Sweden sounded very familiar. I was trying to get business class tickets to and from South Africa and first tried Delta. I got a very bored Delta agent on the line who, after searching for a while, told me, no way, can't do it. I then tried American Next and also got a really friendly, helpful agent. My first choice was to fly British Air. That wasn't possible, but she did find a convoluted routing on Iberia. Then I started asking about British Air flights to nearby countries. Instead of getting annoyed, she said, 'This is fun. I'm always asked to find tickets to the same destination, and it's nice to do something different.' She ultimately got me two seats on BA to Lusaka, Zambia, although I still have a convoluted trip back home. It was a really good airline experience. And, by the way, the destinations that she has asked for over and over are London and Australia and more South Africa." Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to be asking for that trip in a little bit. I think I mentioned in an earlier podcast, we're heading down to Cape Town for spring break. So next March, we'll be heading on the other side of the equator. Well, anyhow, Dan Graben, following up on comparisons between airport security in the U.S. versus other countries, adds his observation. Incheon International Airport in Korea has a pretty rigorous screening process, Dan says, but unlike most of the TSA checkpoints in the U.S., they take a step to acknowledge that it is a burden for travelers. When you remove your shoes, you're given a pair of slippers to wear until your shoes pass through the X-ray machine. On top of that, they have a supply of long-handled shoehorns that make it easier and much quicker to get your shoes on. It's just a nice touch, as is not having to take your laptop out of its case. Dan's mention of the TSA reminds me of a story a friend told me a few weeks ago when I was in Boston. Mike was flying home to Dallas from Houston. It was hot, it was humid, Mike was running late, and he had to fly Continental, where he has no status, meaning the long line. But first, he had to get a boarding pass. The kiosk spit up on him, so he had to go to an agent. And she picked up the boarding pass from the printer, looked at it, gave it a little chuckle, and handed it to Mike. Well, he knew what he was getting before he looked at it, the dreaded Quad S, the super secret secondary search. That was for Mike just the cherry on top of a perfect day. He tossed the boarding pass back at the agent and said, "I don't have time for this today." He was just joking, but to his complete amazement, she took the boarding pass, pecked around on her keyboard a bit, and then printed out a new pass without the Quad S. He thanked her profusely and shuffled off to the line. I mean, who knew she could do that? And finally, from Ed Vauder, an audio review of Yahoo's Fairchase travel search site just out of beta.
Hi, Mark. This is Ed Vodder, a longtime listener and host of Searching the Internet podcast. And I just wanted to give a quick review of the travel site Fairchase from Yahoo. The site is located at fairchase.yahoo.com, and it has many interesting features for those of us who travel a lot. For one thing, once you enter your flight information, it gives you the flights and prices. So say there's a flight later on in the day that's $100 cheaper. On the left-hand side, it'll show you the various times and the prices for those flights of when they leave. It also includes alternate airports. If there's an airport nearby you, you can click that, and it will show you the fares to that airport in addition. It covers most of the major airlines except for Southwest, but even Southwest, it includes a link to directly to their site. It includes also most of the major hotel chains, and on the hotel chains, it's nice that it gives you a map in order so you can see where those hotels are located. It also has weather and links to Yahoo travel guides for the cities you may be traveling to. The only problem I found with it so far is you can't do any open JAWS currently. You can't fly into one airport, rent a car, drive someplace else, and then fly back from the other airport. But Fairchase has been around for a while. I've used it for a couple of months now. It's now out of beta. It's in a full release, and it's located at fairchase.yahoo.com. Also, for your listeners, if they're interested, I have an upcoming episode of Searching the Internet where I'm going to be talking about travel sites. I'll talk about the various search engines for finding airline flights, places to find hotel information, as well as sites with reviews of rooms and such as TripAdvisor. So hopefully your listeners will tune in, and I can be found at qdinformation.com/searching. And once again, that's Searching the Internet podcast.
I'll put a link to episode 5 of Ed's Searching the Internet podcast in the show notes. It provides a great review of travel search sites. You know, way back in Travel Commons number 2, we talked about the love-hate relationship the travel industry has with meta search sites like Kayak and Yahoo. If you're interested, go to the website, click on the May 2005 link on the left sidebar. The meta search topic is 10 minutes and 50 seconds into Travel Commons number 2. Well, thanks to everyone who contributes their thoughts and stories and audio comments, the voice of the traveler, the email address, comments, comments, at travelcommons.com, or you can more easily post them on our new snazzy WordPress-powered website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is full to the brim. The planes are full, and they just keep getting fuller. The Air Transport Association, the U.S. Airline Trade Organization, announced that in May, airlines filled 80.7% of their seats, the highest load factor in May ever recorded by the industry. Now, this isn't a real surprise. Frequent travelers have been feeling the squeeze since the beginning of the year, literally in cases like my colleague Mike, who on the 3-plus-hour flight from Dallas to Boston a few weeks back ended up in a middle seat between two rather beefy guys, in spite of the fact that he's top-tier executive platinum on American. Now, everyone who took Sociology 101 in college knows that crowding leads to stress. The rats start attacking one another, dogs start chewing their fur off, and I think I'm starting to see some of that activity in the air nowadays. Not the chewing the fur off thing. I haven't seen any guys gnawing at their Dockers khakis yet, but certainly a more blatant I win, you lose behavior. And I've probably seen this around carry-on luggage more than anything. You know, with the planes getting tight, the overhead bins, already a scarce commodity, are becoming, well, if not a combat zone, you know, there certainly are a few more skirmishes nowadays. There are at least a half dozen announcements during every boarding process. We have a very full flight today, so please utilize the space between your seat to stow your smaller items. We've all heard it. On my American flight out to Boston a few weeks ago, I heard a new one, though. everyone in seating group 5 will have to check their luggage at the door. Wow. I mean, here you were, you're happy about scoring an aisle seat in the front half of the plane until you heard that announcement. Having status for pre-boarding suddenly becomes a lot more crucial. And it's probably that chase for status that is the reason the airlines have started to even segment their status boarding calls. On American, the sequence is first class, then executive platinum and platinum, their top two status tiers, and then group one, which includes Advantage Gold. And I'll tell you, the elbows in the boarding scrum, even among the status guys, have gotten a bit sharper. I'll tell you, though, the most disappointing breakdown in travel courtesy that I've seen is on the plane when people in those later boarding groups are trying to repack the overhead bin to stuff their bag in. Now, there are some unstated rules. You can move stuff around, but the stuff that's already there has priority. You can pull it out, ask who it belongs to, ask permission to shift it around, and then you make sure that the bin closes. More than a few times recently, though, I've seen people pull out a bag, push theirs in, then place that first bag in front of theirs in a way that the bin won't close, and then they go and they sit down. Then when the flight attendants start coming through to try and close the bin so that the plane can push back, well, the bin doesn't close. They end up pulling out the guy's this first bag, ask who it belongs to, and then if the guy's lucky, they put it in the closet up front, unlucky, and it gets checked. All the while, the perpetrator has his nose down, usually looking intently at the SkyMall catalog. I'll tell you, I'm now much more observant about the activity in the overhead bin above me, and I just I don't start looking at any magazine or crank up the iPod until the flight attendant has closed those bins. But I'll tell you, that doesn't hold a candle to the story that Chris Chufo told me probably a month ago, about a woman who started screaming full blast at a man because she thought his bag was too small for the overhead. You know, at least the rats were quiet when they attacked. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is, what's the one thing, you know, a classic consulting trick tool, pick your word, for getting to the root cause of a problem is to walk around and ask everyone, if you were the CEO, what's the one thing you would change? It's actually an amazingly effective question to get to a root cause. When traveling, whether on business or leisure, you're often asking that same question. For the business traveler, the question usually revolves around food, because that often is all you have time for. You're working in an office all day, but then you got to eat, and lunch or dinner are usually your only opportunity to get a sense of the place you're visiting. Alan Marco, a Travel Commons contributor, dropped me a line last week looking for just a suggestion for his trip to Memphis. Where's the one place that he should go to lunch? Actually, it wasn't a tough question for me. I lived in Memphis for 7 years, as I've mentioned on earlier Travel Commons podcasts, and finished up a 3-month project during the winter. So, you know, one lunch. Well, gotta have pork barbecue. So I asked him just one question: where's your meeting, downtown or East Memphis, Germantown area? Germantown, he said. So I pointed him toward the Germantown Commissary, a little country store that's been converted to a barbecue restaurant some 25 years or so ago. It's off the main drag. Indeed, it's probably about a mile from where my folks used to live when they lived in Germantown. But you wouldn't normally drive by it, and even if you did, there's nothing that would make you stop, unless you were specifically observant about all the cars parked outside of it. It's a true locals place. Alan's note back later that week: wow, great food. I even had the banana pudding. Wow. And a train rumbled by while I was eating there. Thanks for the tip. You know, a few summers back, a colleague was visiting Chicago with his family, and he asked me what he should do. I asked him about his kids. He said two preteen girls. I said, okay, easy. Here's what you do. Walk up Michigan Avenue from your hotel to Chicago Avenue. Take a left, stop at the American Girl store. Your daughters will love it. You'll be amazed. Your daughters will love it. Then you got a free pass the rest of the day from them. Keep walking north. Walk under Lakeshore Drive to Oak Street Beach. Walk up Oak Street Beach till you hit the pedestrian crossing at North Avenue. Cross that. Walk up through Lincoln Park. You hit the south entrance of the zoo. Go in. It's free. Walk all the way up to the zoo. You pop up out of the north end. Continue up into the botanical gardens. It's free too. Go through that. Keep walking north. Take a left at the Shakespeare statue and dead end into the Wiener Circle. Order the char Polish and cheddar fries. Burn it off on the walk back. he stopped for me. He said, can you repeat that? He called me, though, a week later and said it was the best day of his vacation. Planning for my vacation to Sweden next week, the accidental vacation that I discussed in Travel Commons number 38, I think I mentioned I'm heading over to pick up my new Saab. It's a whole sort of story as to why, and if you're interested, listen to number 38. Well, I was looking for the same thing, some local knowledge that could point me to a couple of gotta-do things. Now, United Airlines In-Flight magazine has a nice feature called Three Perfect Days In, and each month features a new city. I'll put the URL for the archives in the show notes. The Stockholm article, though, is from 1998. Suggestions for bike rides through the park are probably still good, but I'm not sure if the restaurant recommendations have aged well over the succeeding 8 years. So I decided to try something new for this trip, podcasts. I searched for Swedish podcasts, couldn't find a whole lot, at least in English, but ended up subscribing to two, the Polar Bear podcast by Andy Nyman and Radio Sweden's repurposed daily news podcast. I didn't get any gotta-dos from either, but I guess I didn't really expect to. I would have liked to, but instead I wanted to get sort of pre-immersed in Sweden, get some familiarity, get a feel for what's going on, and maybe, if I got lucky, some gotta-dos. I was surprised to find that I got a better sense of Sweden from the Radio Sweden newscasts. Andy's podcast is good, but it's very much a personal blog. I got a good read on his relationship with his neighbors, but I just couldn't translate it to suggestions for my week's vacation. To be fair, though, I actually flipped that test back on my hometown, Chicago. And I'm not sure that there's that much more information for Chicago. Maybe a little bit more. There's a theater podcast, a couple of other things. But, I'm not sure I could have found, if I was coming from Stockholm to Chicago for a week, I'm not sure that just listening to podcasts, I would have found too many gotta-dos. So, I don't know, maybe as a summer project, I'll record a couple of quick What You Gotta Do in Chicago podcasts and throw them up on the site. But, I actually think the big challenge, or a big part of the challenge, is that gotta-dos are different depending on who you are and why you're visiting. My gotta-dos are different depending on whether I'm traveling alone on business or as a 40-something father of two, preteens. Both of which are very different from what they were 20 years ago when I was single and could drink a lot more. So I've fallen back on some of my usual tricks. Chowhounds.com for restaurant recommendations, triangulating across a couple of guidebooks, grabbing a couple of tidbits from Rick Steves' website. But this time I've got a new trick. My new Saab convertible. I'll tell you, if the town I'm in isn't fun, it's going to be a whole lot of fun finding that next one. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 41. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music on today's show is from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. The songs in order of appearance, Wanna Love You by Henta Ellis, Snub-Nosed Aardvark. Who thinks these things up? Well, for that one, Derek K. Miller did. And finally, Baja Taxi by Brain Bucket. Bucket, spelled B-U-C-K-I-T. Kind of spells more like my 12-year-old son. Anyhow, I hope you enjoyed them. And the names will be in the show notes. Hey, if you have a story, a thought, a comment, a gripe, moans and groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in those emails, audio files, or posted comments on the website. And always, thank you for stopping by and joining the Travel Commons. Take care, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye now.
Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the one woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling,